Jin is alive, Vincent may know who Jacob is, and Carlton Cuse has a brand new idea for a theme park. All that and more coming up in today's official Lost audio podcast. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the podcast. We're here today with executive producers Damon Lindelof and Carlton Cuse to talk about last night's episode, The Little Prince, and drop a few hints of information about our upcoming episode entitled This Place is Death. That episode airs on February 11th at 9 o'clock, followed by a new episode of Life on Mars. Just a quick note, if you want to hear more about the return of Jin, you can catch actor Daniel Dae Kim in our video podcast, also found at abc.com, which is also a great place to go and submit your questions, wacky, insightful, and challenging as they are, for the audio podcast so that Damon and Carlton can peruse, make fun of, and yes, possibly answer here on the audio podcast. Just go to blogs.abc.com/asklost. Here now are Damon and Carlton.
Well, hello, Damon.
Hi, Carlton.
God, it's been so long since we've done a damn podcast.
I can tell by your fervor.
I'm excited to be actually back in the podcast business.
Can you say damn on a podcast?
You can.
All right.
You can. We have the... It's our rules.
I don't want
our podcast, and we can say damn if we want to.
Anybody to withdraw sponsorship, considering...
Good. Well, get fired up here. Here we go.
Okay, it's Monday morning. Carlton and I are doing a podcast. One of the unfortunate casualties of this time in the year is that we don't get to do our podcast because we are slammed. What's going on right now, Carlton, in the land of Lost?
Well, we are trying to write episode 14, break episodes 15, 16, and 17. We're working out the stories for those. We're trying to get a script out today, an outline published. We have four episodes that we're editing, one that's mixing, and two that are shooting. So this is a very bad time of year. So this is why we are not doing a lot of these. But we will be, once we get all the scripts written, which is about probably 3 weeks from now, we will be, or 4 weeks from now, 5 weeks from now, sometime in that area, we will be more podcast available.
Forever. They'll never be done. The good news is, like, if we do a podcast 2 weeks from now, that's traditionally when we're punchy and giddy and incoherent, and the fans really seem to respond to that.
Those are good.
And we might slip up and tell them who Jacob is, so there is that.
Awesome.
Well, I guess we should probably talk a little bit about last week's episode, The Little Prince. You know,
I like that one. Kind of a nice emotional story.
Is it called The Little Prince after the Saint-Exupéry book of the same name?
I would think that'd be a fair guess.
Right,
absolutely.
Well, for those people who are curious as to that title, they should pick up that book.
Yeah, and you know, for me, the scene where we see Sawyer observe Kate helping Claire give birth—that's a cool scene in the episode. I think that was my favorite moment.
Obviously, one of the questions that we've been asked a lot since the island started skipping through time is: are the characters going to experience each other or themselves? And we did feel like there was one cool opportunity on that night. You know, there was a very eventful night back in season one. The night that Boone died was also the night that Claire gave birth to Aaron, so we could sort of witness that through the prism of a couple of different characters, but it would also give Locke the opportunity to say that he isn't really interested in changing what happened, even though he could spare himself a lot of anxiety by doing so, because he kind of needed to go through that in order to become the man that he is now.
Yeah, I mean, he saw that big light shooting up in the sky and realized that that was the light from the hatch, and
right.
He was like, I don't want to have anything to do with visiting myself
right
on pounding on top of that hatch lid. He's kind of, I guess, enlightened enough to realize that he had to have that whole range of experiences to get to the point where he is now.
And I think people are probably wondering why Sawyer didn't shout out to Kate as he watched her giving birth to Aaron, and the answer to that one is he just didn't want her to drop the baby.
Like, yeah,
I just sometimes the simplest answer is the best answer. And the big development, obviously, at the end of the episode, the one that hopefully has really sort of made people very excited for this week's episode, of course, is the Jin has been out there floating in the water. And every time the sky lights up for him, he's transported along with the island because he's inside the boundaries of whatever this skipping effect is. However, he hasn't really been privy to the fact that it's traveling through time because the ocean kind of is the ocean.
Are the fish underneath Jin transported through time?
That's an excellent question, and will be answered on Lost Tales, our new animated spinoff about the fish surrounding the island, coming to you from Disney next season.
Let's do that show.
That's Tales, T-A-L-E-S, just so you know.
Nice. That's fantastic.
Either way, Jin has now been picked up by a gang of French folk.
Yes.
And
is that Danielle Rousseau?
She says that her name is Danielle Rousseau. She's much cleaner and less crazier than the Danielle Rousseau we know. So I wonder how she becomes the Danielle Rousseau we know.
That might be a good segue into sort of a prehash for episode 505, which is called This Place is Death. And
I like the titles this season.
There's a lot of death.
We try to get death in there any way we can. I think it tells you a little bit about what writing season 5 has been like. For us.
So is it likely that we're going to finally learn how Montand lost his arm?
Oh, right, yes. Montand is one of the French researchers on Rousseau's crew, and Rousseau says back in season 1 as they're hiking out to the Black Rock that they're entering the dark territory where Montand lost his arm. So I would hope as a fan that we'll find out where it was, and then once we find out where he lost it, then perhaps they can find it again.
That would probably be her whole research team, wouldn't it, that she referred to back in season 1.
Montand is the one who plays the violin. Let's just put it to you that way.
Yeah.
Like the old joke, Doctor, will I ever play the violin again?
Doesn't look too good if he actually does lose his arm. So I think we should actually just, you know, confirm that we are going to find out how he lost his arm. That's a good thing for the podcast listeners. They need that. They need a little special something.
All right. You will find out how Montand lost his arm.
And I think, you know, it's going to be fun for the audience to learn a little bit more about what happened with Rousseau and her team. But that being said, I think it's time for fan questions.
Yay!
This is from Christopher J. Kowalski from Hackensack, New Jersey.
Wow, that's where my mom lives.
Awesome.
In Hackensack. It's also where Miss Tessmacher lives, and Tessmacher's mother lives in Superman.
Awesome.
For those of you who are familiar with Superman the motion picture.
That's very cool.
Hackensack.
Damon, did Rose and Bernard die in the flaming arrow attack?
Wow, that's an excellent question, because a lot of people seemingly did.
Pretty much most of the everybody. Socks.
I think that's a good question to be asking, and one that we shouldn't definitively answer here, Carlton. All I would say is, if they died as a result of a flaming arrow attack, I think we would probably show that moment. So
yeah,
I think of all the questions that we're going to be asked over the course of season 5, the one that we're going to get asked most often is, where and when are Rose and Bernard?
I don't actually think that's the question we're going to get asked the most often.
I'm trying to divert away from the other questions.
I feel like there will be about 10,000 time travel questions for every question about Rose and Bernard.
All right, well, we answered that one. They did not die in the flaming arrow attack.
Good. I think that's good for everyone to know.
My first question for you, Carlton, is from Kirsteny from Larkspur, California. And the question is, hi guys, I want to know if Desmond and Penny's son, Charlie, is named after her father, who would be Charles Widmore, or Charlie Pace. Also, I would like to say that I am still very mad at you for killing Charlie. Carlton.
Well, thank you. Sorry for that. Yes, I think Charlie Pace would be the more reasonable assumption as to who he is named after. There's not a lot of love lost between Desmond and Penny and Charles Widmore, so it's not likely that he would be the source of the name. However,
in fact, here's a little behind the scenes nugget. We actually shot that scene, and Widmore says to Desmond, I don't understand why you would name your son after me.
That's right, yeah.
And Desmond says, I didn't name him after you. I named him after the, you know, man who gave his life to try to prevent you from finding the island, you old fuss bucket.
But we cut that out because the fuss bucket line didn't really play.
That's right. We cut it out because the Widmore scene was much more powerful without the sort of didactic Charlie conversation, and we wanted people to ask us.
Yeah.
So mission accomplished.
And that is true. So yes, Charlie Pace, source of that. Here's an easy one for you, Damon. I'm just starting with lobbing some softballs. Scott Olson in Belle Plaine, Minnesota would like to know from you, just give us, what is the translation of the hieroglyphs found in the frozen donkey wheel cave?
The rough translation?
No, I think actually the the refined translation or the rough translation.
I think that the thing about hieroglyphs is they do not translate into actual words or sentences. They're pictograms, so they translate into concepts. And many of the hieroglyphs down in the donkey wheel have to do with resurrection.
Yes.
You know, and we found them basically very often in sort of the tombs of pharaohs. The idea that pharaohs were entombed with all their worldly possessions so that they could return. But we're
or
setting
pass
up
on
a
to higher worlds.
Yeah,
yes.
we're setting up a resurrection theme. Just as part of our prehash, you will be.
How about a resurrection theme park? Wouldn't
wow.
that be cool to like? As,
do you have to die to go?
As an adjunct to like, there's like Walt Disney World, Epcot, and then there's Resurrection Land.
So you bring your dead relatives, and you know, do they have to pay?
There's so many possibilities. We need to give this some more thought. Maybe get back to it on another podcast.
I've given it enough thought, and I'm going to pass. But thanks for the suggestion.
Okay.
All right. Hey, is it possible, Carlton, that the audience might be seeing the frozen donkey wheel again this week?
Oh, there's your phone.
Well, I'm not going to answer it.
It is very possible that they could be seeing the frozen donkey wheel.
Again. This week.
Yes.
Okay. This question's from Linda Griffith, Murphy, Texas.
Is it my question?
I think you just asked me a question about hieroglyphs.
Oh, yeah, you're right. Sorry.
And then you started you used it as a backdoor to pitch your theme park idea. So I'm going to ask you my question. Where did Sawyer come up with the nickname Frogurt? S-P? Linda's concerned that she maybe didn't spell it right. And what does it mean? I guess Linda didn't see the Mobisode.
There is a Mobisode, probably to be found somewhere in the deep bowels of the internet, which features...
Bowels being the operative word.
Which features Frogurt. One of our writers, Eddie Kitsis, has a certain obsession with Frogurt, or Neil, as he's known. And, you know, Eddie has got this amazing ability to sort of delve into the deep details of absolutely minor characters.
Not even minor, but I would say characters that no one else really cares about other than in Eddie's brain. But he somehow wills them into life.
So he had this idea for Neil, who was this one of the Sox who owned a frozen yogurt stand back in the United States. And
the origin of Neil, I think, was back in season 2 in SOS, when basically Bernard is putting these letters
rocks
on the rock.
On the
like
ground,
Hurley basically just says, you know, everybody's saying no, even Frogurt, the guy who makes frozen yogurt.
So they knew that there was a guy named Neil, and he had a frozen yogurt stand, and so they just called him Frogurt.
And then for all the fans who are just dying to... Who is this guy? I need to know more about Frogurt. Even after Nikki and Paolo, we really need to know who these other Sox are.
And by fans, Eddie.
Right.
Eddie was, like, insistent that we had to put Neil on the show. And then we did the Mobisode, so that kind of gave Neil an entry point.
Right.
And then once he was in a Mobisode, then it was like, hey, let's put him in the show. So that was how Frogurt came into existence. And we needed someone to kill,
right.
And we didn't want it to be Rose and Bernard.
We're basically like, what's an awesome way to die? It's a flaming arrow in the chest, and it would only be fitting. If your name is Frogurt and your power is frozen yogurt, what's your enemy, Carlton?
Flaming
arrows.
It's so self-evident. And there was no way we could just have a bunch of flaming arrows just shoot at random people. We needed that 10 seconds of identification and deep bonding with Frogurt before he took the flaming arrow.
We were hoping the audience would go, this guy is so annoying. I really wish he would. And before they could even finish their sentence.
Flaming arrow.
Flaming arrow.
That's good.
Sometimes I wish I'd get shot by a flaming arrow.
Here's another softball for you, Damon.
Yeah, okay, Carlton.
Who was Benjamin Linus and how did he get into the position he is in?
Wow, that's a very...
That's Carrie Schumacher from Washburn, Maine. She's like, just explain it to me.
All right, I'll break it down for you. Benjamin Linus, here's what we know about him. He was born in the woods in Portland, Oregon. This guy, Horace Goodspeed, happened to be hiking through the woods with his friend Olivia.
No, it just feels like it needs some music while you're telling his story.
Then as a result of this this association, Ben's father, Roger, years later, would be invited to become a janitor in the Dharma Initiative. He brings young Ben there. Young Ben starts to see his dead mother on the island. He runs into Richard Alpert. A friendship is struck up. And then we don't know anything beyond that until he became the leader of the others.
Mm-hmm.
Is it possible, Carlton, that this season we will start to fill in some of the missing gaps between that moment And the moment that we come to know Ben as the leader of the others.
Yes!
Excellent.
I hope so. That All was right. great. That was really great.
I do watch the show on occasion.
I think Carrie should be very happy.
All right, well, I actually do have softballs for you, Carlton. This is from Ricky H. in Jasper, Alabama.
Yeah.
The bird in the season 2 finale that flew over Jack, Kate, Sawyer, Michael, and Hurley's head screeched, "Hurley!" as it flew over. Is that going to ever be answered? Or will it be a question, much like Libby's past, that you probably won't have time to be answered? I wasn't aware it was a question, but clearly...
Wait, they forgot the plane. They forgot what's the story with Kate's plane.
Yeah,
That should be on the question, too.
All right, so will we answer the question, which is not a question? Will we see the Hurley bird again? Did it say Hurley's name? Why is it there? What does it mean? When did it become the leader of the others? Carlton, answer now, definitively. Ricky H. needs to know.
Here's the thing. Like, it would actually give me... Nothing would give me more pleasure than doing an entire episode about the Hurley bird, but somehow I don't think that anyone else would share that level of passion about the Hurley bird, mainly you.
Now that the island is skipping through time, is it possible that we will see like a massive egg somewhere on the island, we will realize the Hurley bird will be hatched out of this
egg? Just thought it was really cool that there's like a bird with like a 15-foot wingspan on the island. But
And by we, you mean you.
Yes, basically me.
Maybe there can be a Hurley bird attraction at Resurrection Land.
That would be cool. You know, you're just missing out. There's so many great opportunities. That would be like... You actually get into this giant 15-foot bird and you soar over Resurrection Land, like soaring over California. Like that would be a fantastic ride where you would be in the Hurley bird and you would be flying over the mysterious lost island.
I don't understand the connection between the Hurley bird and Resurrection, but I guess that will be answered at some point in season 7.
Yes, it will be. That's a season 7 question. Great. For sure.
All right. I think we each have time for one more question.
Okay.
So make yours count.
Okay, here's one for you, which I think this one actually is helpful. And in the actual framing of the question, it shows a certain level of confusion that I know you can clear up.
Okay.
Nellie Patterson from Chicago, Illinois wants to know, who is Jeremy Bellum?
Good question, Nellie. I think that she's referring to Jeremy Bentham.
Yes,
and,
I think she is.
And basically, Jeremy Bentham is a name that started getting thrown around a lot in the season 4 finale, but is also the name that appears in the obituary that Jack hands to Kate in the season 3 finale, although I think his finger is partially obscuring the name. You just see the J in the H-A-M or something like
and
that.
And he's a famous philosopher.
He's a famous philosopher, as was John Locke. And we basically learn in the season 4 finale that John Locke was using the name Jeremy Bentham for some reason. That's the name on the coffin in the funeral home.
So when he somehow got off the island, that became his alias, right?
Yes. We don't know why or we don't know how he used that name. But Saeed knows when he goes to pick up Hurley from the mental institution, he asks if Jeremy Bentham came to see him. And Locke goes to Hurley and says, Jeremy Bentham came to see me. And so there's a lot of Jeremy Benthaming. Jeremy Bentham is Locke. We don't know why he didn't call himself John Locke when he came back, maybe because John Locke was supposed to be dead.
Are we going
to
learn how he ended up getting that name, Jeremy Bentham?
I would hope so. I mean,
that'd be a cool thing to learn.
We will not find out how he gets the name Jeremy Bellum, however. Just the name Jeremy Bentham. That's for another time.
Okay. Very good.
All right, my final question for you, Carlton, and it's a doozy, so please indulge me. This is from the Matt Man in Los Angeles, CA, right here. Vincent question. In the episode Outlaws, Locke tells Kate and Sawyer a story about how when he was young, after his foster sister died, a retriever dog appeared at his house and basically helped the foster mom get through it. This is sort of on the axis of reincarnation, as you'll see.
Good.
So this should activate you. Locke said once the mom passed away years later, the dog left and went back to wherever it came from. I couldn't help but notice the similarity between the behavior of that dog and Vincent. Before Walt left on the raft, he told Shannon that Vincent was there for him after his mom died. Then when he gave him to Shannon, he said Vincent could be there for her after Boone died. So my question is it possible that the Lab and Locke story could be Vincent, like a dog version of whatever Richard Alpert is? Or are they totally different dogs, and there's just a theme that all labs are just good to have around when people die? Does Vincent know who Jacob is? That's my favorite part. Just sneaking that in there at the
sneaking
end.
Sneaking that in there.
Does Vincent know who Jacob is?
Wow.
So there you go, Carlton.
That could be the best question ever. I think that those are parallels that are those were kind of it's an awesome kind of exegesis of those kind of that whole the whole Vincent story, and finding the parallels to what Locke said is pretty remarkable. But I think by and large we just think labs are good dogs.
Does Vincent know who Jacob is? And if he did, how could he tell us? Vincent, bang your paws three times if Jacob is
he might
Locke
know
from the
who
future.
Jacob is, but he is definitely not telling.
Okay.
The one thing which we have said, and we will say here for all of the fans in the podcast, Vincent definitively will survive till the end of season six.
So he was not killed in the flaming arrow attack.
He was not. And there's,
maybe he's taking
there's
care
only
of Rose
one
and Bernard.
Character that we are going to confirm will make it all the way to the end of Lost, and that is Vincent the dog.
That's great.
So that's so
unless
you should be
lying.
Very happy. Anyway, well, on that note, these are the dog days of the season, aren't they?
Oh, Carlton.
Anyway, we'll be back with another podcast. We're actually going to try to do one next week, and then there might be a break for a couple of weeks, depending on how busy we are. But we do want to try to have some continuity podcast. And once we do finish the writing, we will try to get back to you guys between episodes. So please keep sending in your awesome questions. We're sorry we could not get to more of them today. There were lots of other good ones that we will bank. But we still want to hear your new questions about the new upcoming episodes.
Like, is it making any sense? All right, thanks, guys.
All right, see you soon.
Bye.
Bye.
That's it for this edition of the official Lost audio podcast. You can catch more from us in video and audio form at abc.com. And don't forget, This Place is Death airs Wednesday, February 11th at 9 p.m., followed by a new episode of Life on Mars, only on ABC.